You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 15 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Mark Forehand, who is the Interim Vice President of Enrollment at Kennesaw State University. You'll hear him talk about how Kennesaw State nearly doubled its total student body enrollment in a decade, the importance of video to Kennesaw's online presence, and how they create video without straining resources, and what channels are most effective for meeting massive enrollment goals. Let's meet Mark.
I started in public higher education in 2014 and started in higher education in general in 2007. Prior to that, I was an attorney, and prior to that, I was in the military. I have worked across a large spectrum of enrollment, advising, recruiting, retention, graduation, retaining private sector students, and at Kennesaw State University, I've been involved in international retention as well as graduate and undergraduate. My current role is Special Assistant to the Provost, in which I perform the duties of the Vice President of Enrollment Services Division, which is currently an empty role at the university. That is a unit with about 320 people in it that handles registrar financial aid, new student programs, retention, business practices, undergraduate admissions, call center communications, and our CRM. Prior to this, my primary role was Senior Assistant Dean for Graduate Enrollment Management.
In your current role, is this on an interim basis, or are you also applying for the role?
Well, they haven't made any decisions about it. Most people would say that they've moved me to the floor where it's going to happen, so something's going to happen.
Tell me a little bit about your current role, and then also tell me a little bit about how you describe Kennesaw State.
Kennesaw State is a massively growing university with 44,000 students located 20 miles from the center of Atlanta. We have had significant growth over the last 10 years. We've gone from, in 2014, we had 26,000 students. Today, our fall class was a total of 44,003 students. So Wow. We've had some really significant growth across both graduate and undergraduate. If I was going to give you my elevator pitch about what I do right now, I am involved in recruiting, admitting, registering, retaining, and graduating undergraduate students. My previous role, I was involved in the same thing for graduate students. We, like most public universities, are heavily tasked with how are we doing with retention and how are we doing with graduating, and are we creating opportunities for graduates to move on to the next level in their life.
Would you say that something draws your heart a little bit more because you said you recruit, you enroll, you register, you retain, you graduate? Do any of those phases of the student life cycle jump out as more exciting to you?
I would say admissions, recruiting and admissions. Once they've accepted and you've converted them, that's a journey that's very specific to that person. But what we're trying to, for lack of a better word, sell to the university, to people who want to come, that's a very exciting thing to be doing. And for lack of experimenting, trying to figure out, it's a very vibrant culture we're in right now. The technology changes constantly. 2 years ago, I worried about what was on Instagram. This year, I'm worrying about what's on TikTok. And I just read an article where there's something new coming out and it's going to win. You've really got, it's one of the hardest things about the job, keeping up with the students.
How do you feel like your background coming from the military and then practicing law has kind of affected or shaped your experiences now?
I would say my background in the military has helped me because I worked with people and got to learn how to lead people without being offensive. My background in the law is helpful in higher ed because there are a lot of rules. And being able to understand how those rules are built, the purpose behind those rules, and the common theme of unless it is expressly forbidden, it is allowed somehow, is very important to, again, deal with the 21st century higher education model. It's a terrible phrase, but everything's got to be outside the box, because this set of students is incredibly unique, like every group of students ever, but they are the most technologically savvy group of students we've ever seen.
Do you want to share some examples of some things that y'all are doing that are quote unquote outside the box?
We have done a lot of work with Student Bridge to build opportunities for people to drive the learning experience about the university. And what that really means is, with our virtual maps, the user decides where they want to go on the map. The map isn't built to say, okay, here you're going, here and here and here. And then we've got videos of students talking about the university that people can choose. They're not chosen for them. In the virtual experience, they get to drive the experience. And we're also using some areas where we are explaining to people who've been accepted why they've been accepted to this program as a stepping stone to the next program. All three of these have been really successful, along with our efforts to not just Student Bridge, but to find that sweet spot of what engages students, which is, like I said before, ever-changing.
You mentioned earlier on that y'all have almost doubled your student population in a little over a decade. What are some things that y'all have done to contribute to that success?
The smartest thing we did was change our CRM and use the materials we have with our various vendors to communicate with students with video, not words. And that's been very important, and we've learned a lot over the last 4 to 5 years about how that's more important to this generation, even graduate students, than long, wordy documents from faculty about how great the program is. Another thing we've done is gone really strongly forward in the graduate market about getting rid of test requirements. Only probably 3 of our 90 programs now require a GRE or a GMAT. And our doctoral programs, we have really worked hard to make it accessible. And accessibility is another way that we have shown a lot of growth as well, especially in graduate, where we've done a lot of online. But in undergraduate, it's the accessibility of making the experience user-friendly and something that the user drives, not the university.
I think a lot of people in higher ed would agree the importance of video and how impactful it can be. But often people say, well, it's expensive, it's time consuming, it's a big drain on resources, we just can't do it. How have y'all managed to put out more and more video, create more and more video? And then how frequently are you creating video?
Because we're a large university, we have a pretty large infrastructure also. So we have a strategic communications unit. However, when you're using a private vendor, for lack of, the quality's better. It has a better shelf life because the quality is just better because you've hired a private sector individual to do this for you, and that's where they're making their money. So, for example, with an operation like Student Bridge, the quality is immaculate, and it has lasted over time, and we've only, in the 4 years, we've only changed the videos twice. And the thing that is really important, because of its shelf life, you can do different things with it because it is still relevant to what you're trying to do, even though the student demographic has changed.
So it's really about being strategic with working in-house, but then also bringing on a partner or a vendor and then repackaging that video footage.
Exactly.
In terms of enrollment marketing, obviously I would say a win is that you've drastically increased your student population and grown enrollment. Is there anything that you feel like your team struggles with or your institution struggles with?
I think we struggle with the same things everybody does. Leadership always wants you to grow. You can't grow every year. And also, at some point, you reach a point of diminishing returns in terms of facilities. Unless you're one of these universities that's only online and has this massive server farm to operate everything, you have a point of diminishing returns. You don't have enough faculty, all of these sort of things. And so parents ask these kind of questions. And so you've got to be able to answer that question in recruiting. And at the graduate level, you have to be able to answer that question of an adult.
So I'm assuming that you have had to build residence halls and hire more faculty. And what have been some of those down the chain implications for the rest of your campus?
So we've had to build a new residence hall, 600 beds. We've had to build two new buildings for academic learning. We've hired just this fall 120 new faculty.
Wow.
And then you get into things like food and housing around the campus, because nobody's got 44,000 dorm rooms. So it becomes a huge lift for everybody on campus. And then you have how parking, all of these things require additional resources that must be thought about, because user experience, initially we all discovered user experience as part of using an app or using the computer, but user experience applies to everybody now. It applies to everything you do and applies also to higher education.
Whenever you were planning to grow enrollment and successful in growing enrollment, were there any non-traditional populations that you targeted? We've had people on the podcast talk about the shrinking high school graduating class and how they're potentially planning on targeting returning students and adult students. What are some of those populations that y'all targeted?
From an undergraduate perspective, we're hard on first gen. Very hard into the first gen, because yes, there will be a cliff. But that means also that we're looking at ways to become Latinx oriented and to become first gen / not identifying in the standard model of parents who went to college and in a certain economic demographic, looking at how we can be more robust in our private scholarship systems to get those folks to come. In graduate, it's becoming more and more about what online offerings do you have. The average age of a graduate student at KSU is 34. That's a person with a job who, in a city with 6.5 million people, in Atlanta is a region with 6.5 million people, that's not a commute anybody wants to make at 5 o'clock at night for night classes. So those kind of things are where if you're going to have that type of demographic, you've got to find offerings that people can do from a computer.
What channels are most effective in reaching and enrolling students?
It's interesting. We track everything. So we've got Facebook Live. We've got Facebook. We've got Facebook Parents. We've got TikTok. We've got Instagram. We've got WeChat. We're across chat platforms all over the world. And then we've got channel marketing, digital, direct. So if you manage to get on a page and you're anywhere near Kennesaw, you're going to get a redirect about a program. If your IP address pops up somewhere in our area and you looked at anything involving schools, there's a good chance you're going to get a digital redirect to us. We use a great deal of digital. We spend a massive amount of money on that. And that's where somewhere, because we have a pretty huge size, we benefit from having some infrastructure to do that. When you don't have that, because my graduate budget was much lower, when you don't have that, you use vendors. You invest in that, you learn that your videos have shelf life, and you use those vendors over and over again through your communication plans. The final thing is we're really working hard with text, because we see through our customer relations management software that people will engage with an email, but only to read it. They won't then click on the link. But a text is something that people will look at. I talked about my wife, she has 12,000 unopened Gmails. But people will engage with a text, and we're using that a lot. So digital and text is what we're really pushing at the moment.
What do you feel like other schools are doing a really great job with?
Brand awareness. There are some schools around us doing really well with brand awareness. Now, there are some schools that don't have to worry about it. Georgia Tech is 18 miles down the road. They are the MIT of the South. But there are other schools that are not like that, who are surrounding us in the six-state area, who are doing a great job with, this is who we are and this is what we're all about. And because brand matters so much to this group of students, they're doing a really great job with that.
And on the flip side, what are some things that you think other schools could be doing better?
There's a bit of a material misrepresentation by all of us. Not everybody's going to get a great job. Not everybody is going to have a great experience. We all need to be doing a better job about wellness and how we can assist you with your wellness while you're here.
So do you think that it's maybe less about misrepresenting yourself and more about truly caring for and providing for students once they're there, and then counseling them to make the best decision, even if that means leaving your institution?
It's not so much a misrepresentation as a lot of us have a misunderstanding of what student success means. So we brand student success as this very specific thing, whereas it's a huge deal. And one of the things that didn't used to be in student success was wellness. And now it's in there. And a lot of us have not adjusted to that yet. So yeah, you've said it a lot better than I said it, I think.
What do you see for the future of higher ed? Obviously, we've just gone through huge change with the pandemic. And then we're, I guess, kind of coming through the other side of it. How did that change? And what do you see for the future?
The pandemic forced us to conduct the experiment of online learning. And we discovered it's not the band-aid we all wanted, that a lot of people were hoping it would be. If we could just do it online, they'll be okay with it. They weren't. The experiment showed us that there is still a huge place for in-person learning. But the experiment also showed us there's, at the same time, the opportunity for a lot of undergraduate degrees to be online from valid universities. And I think people like UCF and Arizona State are really showing that to be the case. State schools with high impact learning practices in the online space, because there's not enough space to put everybody on campus. And people will self-select into these over time as people learn, as we do a better job with kindergartners and then middle school and then high school, people will self-select into this kind of learning. Mm-hmm. And over time, this self-selection will allow us to look at how we offer these things and how we recruit students.
What percent of your student population is in an online program?
Well, in graduate, it's 60%. Yeah. In undergraduate, it's about 15%. But that's because we don't have the offerings.
What are some things that y'all are doing specifically for online students to tend to their wellness? Or is that something that's a goal for the future?
It's got to be a goal for the future because we don't know how to do it yet. This experiment has only been going 2 years. There's not enough data. I think we're really going to see a lot of research papers from faculty, though, that should really inform a lot of the conversation over time.
Is there anything else that you want to touch on?
The thing about especially public higher education is everybody, there's a mistaken impression that it's this liberal deal. They're very conservative organizations. They're slow to make change. They're slow to get it done. And things are moving so quickly. In the 8 years I've been back in the United States, there have been platform after platform has come up, gone away, new one comes up that people just jump around to. And it's the same thing with education. Currently, all the rage is STEM, but it's about to be taken over by something called FinTech. So in 5 years from now, everybody says, I'm going to major in FinTech. Do you know what that actually means?
What is an app or a marketing tool that you could not live without?
The marketing tool would be a dashboard. An app I can't live without? For an old guy like me, it's probably anything involving Google because of their ability to SEO everything and get you, if you put in the right search tool, you can find out what an 18-year-old's up to.
And if you could go back 5 to 10 years and give yourself advice, what would it be?
If I could go all the way back to before I started practicing law, it would be, just because everybody in your family's a lawyer, you don't have to be one also. And I think that applies to everything. The advice I would really strongly say, if you have siblings, there is no rule says you all got to be the same. That's what I would say to myself from back then.
If someone wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Probably through my email. I do have a LinkedIn profile for Mark Forehand for Kennesaw. But be careful, because there is a marketing full professor named Mark Forehand at the University of Washington. And he and I get each other's emails all the time.
Thank you so much for interviewing me with me today. This was such a great conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. I really was happy to be a part of it. Thanks.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.